Again, this is a very special week. You know, Baruch Hashem, the United States has recognized what was already very, very obvious. Once again, Hashem often picks very unusual people to be his shaliach. And that is because you can only attribute it to God. You cannot attribute it to man because he's a very unlikely person. But for whatever the reason, like Koresh thousands of years ago, he was the shaliach of Hashem to kind of further the redemption of the Jewish people. We do, of course, have to be mispalel, meaning to say, just as back in 1948, with the proclamation of the Medina, there was a war and we needed to be very, very serious about it. So too, we have to be mispalel that there should be peace, that Jews should not be harmed. There is always a certain risk in this type of behavior. And B'ezrat Hashem, Hashem should have rachamim on Eretz Yisrael and Am Yisrael on Yerushalayim, Yer HaKadosh. What I wanted to do today is I wanted to take a little break from Mishlei, also next week as well, because next week is a special program. And I want to talk a little bit about Chanukah, which is coming up. And those of you that are from the United States, and I guess most of you are, may remember, okay, I apologize, I am America-centric, so I do apologize. But in the United States every year, particularly among the Reform movement, there is a perennial debate, is Chanukah important or is Chanukah not important? And the Reform movement has gone up and down on this, meaning to say, when I was a kid, they made a very big effort to build up Chanukah because it was in competition with the Christian holiday. So they made Chanukah a very, very big deal, much more so than Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, etc. But then there was a counter-reaction in which they go out of their way now to write articles saying Chanukah is not such an important festival, it is not a Yom Tov, it is not this, it is not that, and you should not confuse it with the centrality of Christmas in the Christian tradition. So they go up and down, important, not important. Sometimes they want to build it up, sometimes they want to tear it down. But the truth of the matter is, as far as we're concerned, Chanukah is always Chanukah, and that is, on one hand, it is not a Yom Tov. That's of course true. You're allowed to do malacha on Chanukah. On the other hand, Chanukah is a very, very beautiful day, a season, and it communicates extremely important messages that are as relevant, if not more so, to the generation we live in, as it was to the Maccabees and to the Hashmonaim and the like. Because we have to remember that although Chanukah does commemorate a war, a military struggle, which culminated in the establishment of an independent Jewish state under the Hashmonaim, the war was not about politics and the war was not even about independence. The war was a war in order to be able to observe the Torah, in order to be able to keep the mitzvos. Had Antiochus not promulgated all of his decrees against Bris Milah, against Shabbos, against Rosh Chodesh, the Jewish people were content, more or less, to be under foreign domination until such time as Hashem redeemed them. So the struggle of Chanukah is not about the struggle for political independence, although it turned into that, to be sure. It's about the struggle to keep the Torah, even when you're facing the pressures of assimilation and coercion. That is one point to keep in mind. That is why the Levush has a very famous observation that how come on Purim we are mechuyev to celebrate by a physical meal? We have to eat and drink on Purim. On Chanukah, although we make latkes and everything else, there is no chiyev. You're not mechuyev to make a seuda. The chiyev of seuda is only for Purim, it is not for Chanukah. So the Levush gives a very well-known explanation, many of you probably heard it, and that is, Purim, the danger that we faced was a danger to our bodies, it was a danger of physical, to our physical survival. Haman was like Hitler, Yimach Shemo. Haman did not care if you were a religious Jew or a non-religious Jew. Haman didn't care. Haman, because of his insane jealousy, just wanted to destroy anybody that was the same nation as Mordechai. from, not from. So Haman threatened the body. So when Hashem redeems us from that danger, we celebrate with our body, eating and drinking. Antiochus did not threaten our body. It turned into a war, but Antiochus initially, you know, in a perverse way, Antiochus was not anti-Semitic. Antiochus could even be called a civil libertarian, because Antiochus' position basically was, Jews will have full political and civil and economic rights to participate in his empire, provided they give up their distinctness and their uniqueness. He wanted a homogenized society. He wanted a Hellenistic society. He wanted everybody to be the same. He didn't want there to be some unique nation that served Hashem in different ways. So the threat of Hanukkah was not to our bodies. Right? Even the story of Hannah and her seven sons. I mean, yes, they got killed, but they got killed only because they didn't do Avodah Zarah. If they could have done Avodah Zarah, they could have lived. So the sakana was not to the body. The sakana was to the neshama. Therefore, we give thanks to Hashem via a medium that is symbolic of a neshama, and that is candles, as the pasuk says in Mishlei. So we are Yotzei, one pasuk in Mishlei today. Ner Hashem nishmat adam. The soul of a person is a candle ignited by Hashem. Purim, physical danger, therefore physical celebration. Hanukkah, spiritual danger, therefore spiritual celebration. Now, another thing to keep in mind is this. And historically, this is very interesting. Antiochus was the very first king, this is quite astounding, in history, who promulgated anti-religious decrees. In other words, we had plenty of Rishayim before Antiochus. We had Paro in Mitzrayim, and we had Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. So of course we had Rishayim, we had Achashverosh, we had many, many Rishayim. But Bederech Klal, the Rishayim persecuted us, the Rishayim enslaved us, the Rishayim killed us, the Rishayim exiled us, the Rishayim destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But they did not pass gezeros that we couldn't keep the mitzvahs. Even Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar never made a gezera that a Jew can't keep Shabbos or wear tefillin or keep kosher. The very first king in the ancient world who promulgated decrees specifically against the Torah was Antiochus. And that's pretty late. Remember, Antiochus is during the second Beis HaMikdash, right? So the whole period of Tanakh, all of the enemies, they did not make gezeros against the religion of Am Yisrael. In fact, the only kings who made gezeros against the religion of Am Yisrael were the Jewish kings, like Achav. It was the Jewish kings that said, the Jews can't worship Hashem. You're Evan ben Nevat. The Goyim didn't care. You know, you can do what you want. Even the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, not as an anti-religious thing. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash because this was his attempt to crush Jewish sovereignty. As far as Nebuchadnezzar was concerned, it was a political decision. Now, the thing to know, though, is that although Antiochus attempted to coerce Jews away from the Torah in the direction of Hellenism, in truth, most of the Jewish people were doing that anyway on their own. Remember, Alexander the Great, or Alexander of Macedonia, who had conquered the Persian Empire, and with that he had automatically gained control of Eretz Israel, introduced Hellenistic culture and values throughout his massive empire, and most of the Jews went along with it. So when we have the small group called the Maccabees, the Maccabim, or the Hashmonaim, you have to remember, not only were they fighting against the greatest military power in the world, against overwhelming odds, but they did not have the support of their own people. Most of the Jewish people at the time looked at the Hashmonaim or the Maccabim as fanatics, as old-fashioned, as retrogressive, as primitive, as people who were preventing the Jewish nation from becoming part of general society. So as a result, although the Maccabees were not fighting against Jews, they were fighting against the Yavanim, but spiritually, they were also combating most of Am Yisrael. In fact, some have estimated, which is quite astounding, that there were as few as 1,000 Jews who remained faithful to the Torah. 1,000 Jews. I don't think we've ever reached even something near that point throughout our history, that in which there were only 1,000 Jews keeping the mitzvahs. Others say 10,000, which is a lot more, but still, that's a very, very, very small number. Yiddishkeit was hanging by a thread. So that's what Chanukah is about. Now, it's a very interesting point. It's been pointed out that in the Mishnah, now the Mishnah was compiled by Rav Yehuda HaNasi in around the year approximately 200 of the Common Era. Now remember, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by the Romans in the year 70. The Bar Kokhba revolt was the year 130. This is after the Bar Kokhba revolt. Now, so the Jewish people had went through two cataclysmic tragedies. The Chorban Beis HaMikdash, Tisha B'Av, and the destruction of Bar Kokhba's army in Beitar. And in fact, in terms of casualties, there were even more people who died in the Bar Kokhba revolt than even the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And the last battle of Bar Kokhba in Beitar, that also occurred on Tisha B'Av. So when we mourn on Tisha B'Av, we're mourning the Chorban Beis HaMikdash and the Chorban of Beitar. So afterwards, there was a bit of respite, a bit of peace. And that's why Rav Yehuda HaNasi figured, we never know if there'll be new persecutions or not. So when we can write down the oral law, we wrote it down. That's why the Mishnah was written down. Now, the Chanukah story, just to orient you in terms of this, took place, again, everything's approximately 180 before the Common Era. Before the Common Era. So by the time the Mishnah was written, it was almost 400 years since the Chanukah story, right? Everyone follows that. Because the Chanukah story is 180 before the Common Era. The Mishnah is written 200 after the Common Era. So it's 380 years, 400 years. Now, it's been pointed out, there's a whole tractate of Mishnah dealing with Purim called Maseches Megillah. There is no tractate dealing with Chanukah. But not only is there no tractate, Chanukah is barely mentioned in the Mishnah at all. Ad kedei kach, then when Rav Chaim Kanevsky, sometimes parents bring their kids, their bar mitzvah boys who learned a lot of Mishnayos, so they bring them to Rav Chaim Kanevsky for a bechina. And I saw this three or four times. I saw different bechinas he gives. He always asks the same question: where does the Mishnah mention Chanukah? And it mentions it in a very, very odd place. Nothing to do with Chanukah. It's talking about the mitzvah of Bikurim. So it mentions that you're only allowed to bring the Bikurim of the old year until Chanukah. After Chanukah, it's already spoiled. You can't bring it, right? So it's not about the holiday of Chanukah. It just mentions Chanukah. So if the kid knows that, that means he has he remembers even the small details of the Mishnah. And it's been pointed out, why does the Mishnah make such a little deal about Chanukah? So there are a few explanations. Explanation number one, which I think is a valid explanation too, is that the Mishnah was written while the Jewish people are under the domination of Rome. In the past 100 years before the Mishnah, the Jewish people had rebelled against Rome twice. They had rebelled, and that resulted in the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And then Bar Kokhba revolts, and that resulted in the massive destruction of Beitar. The Romans were watching the Jews very carefully for signs of rebellion. So, we have this holiday called Chanukah. Some Roman guy walks by and says, what's this Chanukah story about? This is the celebration of how we overthrew a foreign power that was dominating Eretz Yisrael. It's not a politically correct type of holiday during a dangerous time. In fact, that's actually why the Gemara says, the Gemara makes the point that optimally you should light the menorah outside, like we do in Yerushalayim, like many people do in Yerushalayim. But it says, but when that's a sakana, you light it inside. Now, what's the sakana? It's not a fire hazard. Usually outside is safer than inside in terms of fire hazards. It means it was a sakana because you might antagonize the Romans that think, like Paul Revere, you know, one light, you know, you're making lights for a rebellion, etc. So one reason why the Mishnah de-emphasizes Hanukkah is because Hanukkah was a dangerous holiday to celebrate, although Jews did celebrate it. But there's another reason, and this is a sad reason, that in some ways, Hanukkah turned out to be a failure. Why is that so? I don't know if any of you ever read George Orwell's Animal Farm. Not 1984, but Animal Farm. And Animal Farm is his parody of the Russian Revolution in 1917. And Orwell's point generally was to show that sometimes, and maybe often, when revolutionaries overthrow a certain tyranny, they become even worse than that which they overthrew. Thus, for example, as bad as the Tsar was, Lenin and certainly Stalin were a lot worse. The French Revolution, as bad as Louis XVI was, Robespierre was a bigger murderer. Cambodia, Pol Pot. In other words, so in the story, the animals revolt against the human masters, and then some of the animals become more oppressive than the human masters. So here is the ultimate irony from Rav Yehuda HaNasi's perspective 400 years later. The Maccabim, the Chashmonaim, overthrew the Greek presence in Eretz Yisrael. And they did so to establish Torah, Yiras Shamayim, Mitzvos, Kedusha. And as the Ramban writes, those early Chashmonaim were Tzadikei Elyon. They were righteous and holy people. But they did establish a Malchus, the Hasmonean kingdom. And the Hasmonean kingdom lasted for over 150 years till the Romans came in. And eventually, what happened amazingly was the later Hasmonean Malachim became as Hellenistic as the Greeks that they had driven out of Eretz Yisrael. Yanai HaMelech, who happened to marry the sister of Shimon ben Shetach, and she herself became a very righteous woman who ruled after Yanai died. But Yanai HaMelech killed thousands and thousands of Chachamim. He prohibited the study of the Torah. The sages had to go in hiding, as it were. So from Rav Yehuda HaNasi's perspective, which is already after. So first of all, by Rav Yehuda HaNasi's time, everything collapsed. There was no Malchus Chashmonai. They were conquered by the Romans. So politically, nothing was accomplished. But more importantly, spiritually, nothing was accomplished either. They overthrew the Yavanim, and they became Misyavnim. So what are you gaining? Maybe better to have a guy that's oppressing you than a Jew that's oppressing you. Yeah.
In the beginning.
Right. Right, and then of course you saw the Nisim of Hanukkah, the Milchama, and yeah.
And then the question is, why was the tradition, the mitzvah of Hanukkah, nevertheless continued when it was so bad?
Yes, so the short answer is that even if this meant that from Rav Yehuda HaNasi's perspective, Hanukkah was a disappointment, it petered out, all of the promise was never realized, what it could have become, but still, the message of the potential of Hashem giving us light in the darkness was important enough that we needed to preserve it. Even though, as it were, the actual historical background didn't turn out to be what it could have turned out to be. Again, it's an amazing, amazing irony that Malchus Chashmonai became, in fact, in our chronology, in the way we count it, when we count the years of the different gullahs, the gullahs of Babel, the gullahs of Persia, the gullahs of Yavan, the gullahs of Rome, Chazal include the whole Malchus Chashmonai as the gullahs of Yavan. They don't count it as, oh, this is the brief independent Jewish state. The fact that we were politically independent didn't mean anything to Chazal. Because spiritually, the Malchus Chashmonai was just a continuation of Malchus Yavan, and maybe it was even worse, because after all, you have a Jew that's oppressing you and not allowing you to keep the Torah. That's even more painful. Okay, so that's why Hanukkah is de-emphasized, but it's still maintained. It is still retained. Now, one of the most famous questions that everybody knows about Hanukkah is the question of Rav Yosef Karo, the Beis Yosef. That is, they found enough oil to burn for one day, and there was a miracle that the oil burned for 8 days, which gave them enough time to become pure, because, you know, you're tamei for 7 days, become pure and make new oil. So the kasha is, Hanukkah should be 7 day holiday. Why 8 days? The first day is no miracle. There was enough oil for one day. Famous, famous question. And there are many, many answers. There are at least 500 answers to this question, because I've seen Svarim that have 500 answers. I'm not going to give you 500 answers, but I want to give you maybe three answers. Answer number one is really more of a pilpul answer, but I'll mention it because it's very cute. And that is, you know, there's a machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. How are you supposed to light the candles? Beis Shammai says, start with 8 and you go down. Beis Hillel says, like we do, start with 1 and go up. Now, if Hanukkah would have been 7 days, on the 4th day of Hanukkah, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would be the same, because you would do 7, 6, 5, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And Halacha wants to always make it clear that we follow Beis Hillel. So every single day of Hanukkah, there has to be a difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Now, when you start Hanukkah with 8 days, there'll always be a difference, because 1, 2, 3, 4, according to Beis Shammai, it'll be 8, 7, 6, 5, right? So in any given day, you'll always be able to tell. And they want to say, this is a merumas in the very word Hanukkah, where Hanukkah is a Rosh Teva, an abbreviation, Ches Neros. You light 8 days, Vahalacha Kibbeis Hillel, because the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Okay, it's a bit of a pilpul, as I say. That's not an actual reason, but it's something to think about, because we do want to indicate the halacha is like Beis Hillel. But let me give you some other answers. One answer that the Meforshim give is that there was a miracle that they looked for the oil. They looked for the oil. Not that the oil was there, but they looked. Because after all, after a long and difficult war in which so many Jews died and in which so many Jews were still assimilated, because the miracle didn't happen yet, the miracle of the oil, which brought them to tshuva, one could understand that you're despondent, your energy is spent. Why are you looking for that little jar of oil that is so unlikely to be found, especially since the halacha permits you to use impure oil? The halacha actually permits you to use impure oil for lighting the menorah. So there was a miracle that they cared enough about Avodas Hashem that they looked. You know, sometimes the miracle is that Hashem gives us the koach to respond in a certain way. You know, the Holocaust, we're not going to discuss why Hashem allowed it, and I mean, those are very, very difficult questions, but the one thing we can say is that the survival and rejuvenation of the Jewish people after the Holocaust is also a miracle. That we go on and we get up and we fall and we're crushed, but Hashem gives us the koach, not just to physically live, it's not like we're living in a cave in Afghanistan, but to flourish and create and build a Torah, build Medinat Yisrael, all of these different things. So there's a certain miracle in having the hislavos, the enthusiasm, to look for holiness, even though you had an excuse not to do it. Rav Yisrael Meir Lau, the former Rav HaRashi, who is the father of the present Rav HaRashi, and of course Rav Lau in retirement, so to speak, has become the Rav of Tel Aviv. I have a feeling maybe Rav of Tel Aviv might be a more difficult job than even Chief Rav HaRashi, but technically he works for his son, right? So Rav Lau Sr. is now under his son, Rav Lau Jr., but Rav Lau Sr., you know, spent his very early childhood years in a concentration camp. And he was kept alive by his older brother. And his older brother used to drag him around in a sack all day so the Nazis wouldn't discover him, because if they would discover a four-year-old child, they would shoot him right away. So his brother slept him along in a bag, so it's hard to believe, like most of the day. And Rav Lau pointed out that all of his life, he said, this was a tremendous miracle. Like, why didn't the Nazis say, what's in that bag you're always schlepping around? And they didn't. Because if they would have opened the bag, they would have found him. So he says, sometimes there's a miracle that you don't look when it's obvious you should look. Other times there's a miracle that you look. So Chanukah is reversed. His miracle was the Nazis didn't look, even though they should have. The Chanukah miracle was they did look, even though perhaps there was no reason for them to do so, right? It's kind of, he used to say it was the opposite of the miracle that happened in his own life. Answer number two is, yeah. No, because here's the idea. The miracle of the oil burning extra time was only 7 days. But the miracle of day one was the tircha and the effort they put in looking for the oil. Therefore, b'sach hakol, there are 8 days of miracle. That's the idea. Answer number two is from the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer says, maybe the premise of the question is incorrect, because the premise is saying, oh, it's only a miracle for the 7 extra days. First day is not a miracle because oil burns for 1 day. But that's a mistake, because the truth is a Jew has to believe that every single thing that happens in this world is a miracle and a gift from Hashem. We say in the Shemona Esrei 3 times a day, Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu, for the miracles that are with us every single day. You can walk, you can talk, you can breathe. If you're zocheh to be in Eretz Yisrael, zocheh to be in Yerushalayim. It's a miracle. Elamai, but because it's habitual, because it's that happens every day, we take it for granted. So the Ramban writes, the word nes, which we translate as miracle, is actually connected to the word for banner. A degel is a nes, like we have the son nes, lift up the banner, which means we take teva for granted. So every once in a while, Hashem has to give us a red flag, some supernatural thing, so we'll realize that he runs the world. But ultimately, a person has to know that the ordinary burning of oil is just as much of a miracle as the 7 extra days. And this is the famous Gemara by Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. He was a great, great Tana, a great miracle worker. But he was very, very poor. He did not want to use his koach for himself. That's what the Gemara said. The whole world gets parnasa in his zechus. And he lives on kav charuvim, a small measure of carob, of buxer. May Erev Shabbos, the Erev Shabbos, the whole week. So his wife said to him, we don't even have oil to light the Ner Shabbos. So he said, take your vinegar and light it. She said, vinegar doesn't burn. And he said, the same God that said oil burns can say that vinegar burns as well. From Hashem's perspective, one is no different than the other. And indeed, the vinegar burns. Because he reached a madrega where he saw everything coming from Hashem. So Chanukah, the whole idea of Chanukah being 8 days, says the Chassam Sofer, is that we should understand. And this creates gratitude, that even the parts of life that we take for granted are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore we have to be grateful. And he even gives a beautiful pshat in the song Ma'oz Tzur. Right? Ma'oz Tzur, the very beloved song that we sing after Hadlakas Neiros. And if you go through it, the author is Mordechai, not of Purim fame, but it spells out, the stanzas spell out the name Mordechai, otherwise unknown. We don't know which Mordechai it is, who it is. But it goes through the whole history of the Jewish people with Mitzrayim and Bavel and Persia and Yavan. Right, the Hanukkah story is only one stanza. Yavanim nikbetsu alai. And then at the end, there's a prayer that Hashem should cause the downfall of the Malchus of Edom and bring Mashiach. And that's a heavily censored stanza. That's why different Siddurim have different wordings, because it was rewritten in different ways and the like. And by the way, the last one is not from Mordechai, because Mordechai is already finished with Yevanim. Chasof Zora Kachecha was written by someone else. And that is why there are actually many alternative endings. The Ramah wrote something, and they're like, you know, besides the different Girsos in the stanza Chasof Zora Kachecha, there are many alternative stanzas that you have. But be it as it may, in the Hanukkah stanza, it says, B'nei bina yemei shimona kavu shir urinanim. B'nei bina, those people of understanding, for 8 days they established song and rejoicing. So the Chasam Sofer says, why does the author use the designation B'nei bina? Now, the simple answer would be that the author needs a rhyme with Shemona. Hanukkah is 8 days. So, right, so he wants to end a line with 8 days of Hanukkah. So you have to have a word that rhymes with Yemei Shemona. So B'nei Bina, Yemei Shemona. Yeah, I don't dismiss that. I mean, when you're writing a poem, you gotta come up with it. But the Chasam Sofer gives a deeper reason. What is the difference between Chacham and Maven, or Chachma and Bina? So Chachma is the facts and the data and the knowledge that you pick up. A Chacham knows a lot. He's seen a lot. He's read a lot. He's observed a lot. He's an encyclopedia. He has much, much knowledge in his head. Bina is the capacity to extrapolate from what you know and analyze a new and different situation. And that's a capacity that not every chacham will have. So, for example, even in halacha, a chacham might know the whole shas by heart. But now we bring to him a question about using electricity on Shabbos. So the chacham will say, I have gone through the whole Talmud, and there is not a single reference to electricity in the Gemara. I don't know. A maven would understand, yeah, of course the Gemara doesn't talk about electricity, but it talks about cases which have an underlying concept, and then I can take all of the data, right? That's what a posek does, right? When we talk about someone as a posek, that doesn't just mean they know the laws of the Shulchan Aruch, although that's a very big accomplishment, but it means they can take the laws of the Shulchan Aruch and apply it to new situations that are not in the Shulchan Aruch. Right? Because new things happen all the time. I mean, all sorts of technologies are not in the Shulchan Aruch. But we have to know how halacha deals with, right? That's, right, so the greater the posek, right, what makes a posek great is not just what he knows, but his ability to apply that knowledge. So this is what the Chasam Sofer says. If you were just a chacham, you would have made Hanukkah for 7 days. Because oil, there was enough oil to burn for 1 day. The miracle I see is 7 days. But if you're B'nai Bina, if you're Maven Dover Mitoch Dover, from the miracle you understand that even nature is a miracle. You make Hanukkah 8 days. So B'nai Bina, Yemei Shmona. The Kayach of Bina, you make Hanukkah 8 days. Yeah. That's correct. That's correct. Eight itself, right? The natural cycle of the world is 7 days. Eight is above nature. That is why Bris Milah is eight, because Hashem's relationship to us goes beyond the natural world. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's another answer. Meaning, it depends on the girsa. The girsa, the text in the Gemara is, there was enough oil to last for 1 day. That's the text. But the She'iltos, one of the earliest Gaonim, had a girsa, lo haya bo lahadlik afilu yom echad. So you're correct. Depending on the girsa, there may not have been enough. And of course, Rav Yosef Karo, by the way, himself gives an answer that since they didn't know they would have oil for the next day, they divided the pach shemen into eight chalakim, and on the first day, they only put 1/8 of the oil in. So memela, that was a miracle, that it burnt. Or, according to another teretz, as soon as they emptied all of it into the ner, the neros, it immediately filled up again. So those are of Yosef Cairo's own teretz. Yeah. Right, the oil didn't go down. Right, right. So they saw on the first day. Right. Yeah, that's again. Those are all. You know, good answers. As they say, there are 500 answers, and you know, all of what you're saying are some of the answers that are given. But I want to give you a third answer from the Maral, and the Maral wrote a very, very beautiful sefer on Hanukkah. It's not that long. It's called Ner Mitzvah. There is an old translation of it going back maybe 30, 35 years ago. I'm not sure if it's still around. But it's called Ner Mitzvah. It's one of the most beautiful and accessible Sfarim of the Maral. And he says the following. He says, you know, if you ask anybody, why do we celebrate Hanukkah? They're going to answer because there was a miracle with the oil. But the Maral says that's actually very, very difficult. We generally do not make holidays simply because Hashem did some miracle. We make Yomim Tovim based that we were saved, you know, something, we were liberated. A stam miracle, we don't, I mean, after all, keep in mind that even before the Hanukkah story, there was always one candle on the menorah that didn't go out. So the concept of a candle not going out was already there before the Hanukkah story. With Hanukkah, none of them went out. Okay, so it was a little bit more. The Maral says, it's a Dover Pashat, the Maral says, that the reason why we have a holiday of Hanukkah is not because of the miracle of the oil at all. It is because we regained the Beis HaMikdash that had been contaminated and by the Yevanim. And when you dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, and that's the word Hanukkah, Hanukkah means dedication, Chanukat HaBayit. When Moshe Rabbeinu did the Chanukah of the Mishkan, it was an 8-day ceremony. Chanukah is 8 days, not because of the Pach HaShemen. Chanukah is 8 days because of Chanukat HaBayit. Chanukat HaBayit is 8 days, as we find with Moshe Rabbeinu. It is a celebration of the Chanukas HaBayit. Now, the only question you'll ask is, well, wait a second. It's true that Moshe's Chanukah HaMishkan was 8 days, but Shlomo HaMelech's dedication of the first Beis HaMikdash was 14 days. So why, when they dedicate the second Mikdash, do they follow Moshe Rabbeinu instead of Shlomo? They should have had a 14-day dedication ceremony. The Maral says, I'll give you an answer for that as well, because there's a Medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu himself finished the Mishkan, or Bezalel finished the Mishkan in Kislev. And the Mishkan should have been dedicated in Kislev. But Hashem deferred it, because Hashem wanted it to be dedicated in the month of Nisan, which is the month of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the month of Kislev was very upset. And Hashem promised the month of Kislev that Liyosid Lavo, in the story of Hanukkah, you will be the month that will be the month of the dedication of the Bayit Sheni. So it turns out that Kislev is owed a dedication ceremony back from Moshe Rabbeinu's time. So what dedication ceremony does it get? The 8 days of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is what the Maral says. So the question the Maral then says is, so it turns out according to the Maral, this is very significant, the holiday of Chanukah would have existed even if there wouldn't have been any miracle of the oil at all. It is the simcha of the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. So even if there wouldn't have been candles, Chanukah would have been a holiday. So the question is, so why do we celebrate it by the candles? So the Maral says, because if we simply celebrated the military victory and the regaining of the temple, we might have attributed it to our own success. Kochi v'yotzim yadi. So Hashem coupled the regaining of the Beis HaMikdash with a supernatural miracle, so we will know not to attribute our military success to ourselves. In other words, the miracle of the Neros gives perspective on the real miracle, which is the Chanukah Sabayis, the gaining of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, this is why in the Al HaNisim prayer, it does not mention the miracle of the candles at all. It only talks about how over overwhelming odds the pure defeated the tamei, the few defeated the many, and we were able to regain the Beis HaMikdash. Why doesn't it mention the Pach HaShemen? Like the Maral, it's very simple. The Pach HaShemen is not the miracle of Chanukah. The Pach HaShemen is just there, so we'll realize that the war was not because of our effort, it's because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Al HaNisim only emphasizes the Milchama and the Chanukah Sabayis. Even though it says in Al HaNisim, Hidliku Neirotz, the Chasos Kachecha, that is not referring to the miracle. That just means we regained the Beis HaMikdash and we were able to light the menorah. But now I want to really share with you something else, a final thought, which maybe is the most important of all. And that is, even though on Chanukah we regained the Beis HaMikdash and we had a dedication ceremony, this was not the end of the war with Yavan. The war against Antiochus and his successors actually lasted for almost 25 years. In other words, the holiday of Chanukah is not the end of the struggle. The holiday of Chanukah is the beginning of the struggle. The miracle of the Neros, of course, it was very pivotal that we regained the Beis HaMikdash, but it was not the end, it was the beginning, or towards the beginning. There's something very powerful here, because that makes the message of the Menorah a much more meaningful message. It was very difficult to be a Maccabee, to be a Chashmonai. You're a small group of people. You are facing the greatest power in the world. You are not supported by your own people, your fellow Jews, who look at you as fanatic. It would have been so easy to give up hope. What's the use of fighting? What's the use of keeping going day after day? If we want to keep the Torah, let us retreat into the desert and go into the caves. What do we think we're able to do? Now, when they find that oil, what does the oil tell them? The oil tells them, here is one jar of oil. The oil can burn only one day. You might think, what's the use of lighting it for one day if tomorrow it's going to go out? And there'll be nothing to replace it. So what did the Menorah tell them? The Menorah told them, you do whatever you can do in this world. No matter how ineffectual, no matter how trivial you think it is. But you do what you can do. And then Hashem blesses your efforts beyond which what you thought were possible. What does that say to a Maccabee? What does that say to a Chashmonai? Keep on going. Don't give up. That's why I've always thought it's much more powerful to get that message in the beginning of your struggle rather than at the end. At the end, when you achieve victory, it's only frosting on the cake. But in the middle of a difficult, difficult tribulation trial where you think you won't be able to accomplish anything, to get the message that when you do what you can, Hashem blesses your efforts beyond what you thought were possible. That was a message that gave them the courage to keep struggling. Now, the truth of the matter is, this is an enormously important message for every Jewish person. The world is filled with a lot of darkness. There's darkness in many, many levels. There's the darkness of oppression. There's the darkness of man's inhumanity to man, cruelty, death, disease. There's the darkness of ignorance and assimilation. There's the personal darkness that human beings have of the suffering in their own life. But our job is to try to put a light in that darkness. But often, the darkness is so overwhelming and our light is so puny and small and it will go out and it won't last that we think there is no purpose and there's no use in lighting that light. What's going to happen? So I'll have one good day and then afterwards what? So what the lesson of Chanukah is, you light whatever light you have, no matter how small and worthless you might think it is. And then you never know what happens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the humble light and magnifies it beyond what you thought was possible. And that's really our response to all of the different forms of darkness that exist in the world. So Chanukah is the message of hope and the message of optimism and the message of emunah and the idea of not being crushed by the tragedies and the sadness that befalls Am Yisrael and the tragedies and the sadness that befall us as individuals as well. We have to always be people who are willing to light whatever we can. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes over. So I wish you all a very lichtige Chanukah and very good and be well.